sustaining alive, sustaining alive. Sustaining alive.
Sustaining alive on 95 BFM.
Good afternoon, or good evening, I should say, now that we're in not daylight savings time, Red Steel.
I think it's called un-daylight savings.
It is dark, hey, gloomy, winter is coming.
Shit.
Have you been watching Game of Thrones trailers?
Haven't everyone?
I've got a couple seasons to catch up on.
I actually was thinking, this is, look, I've been wanting to say this for a while. I was thinking about Game of Thrones a while back, and I called it, like Lord of the Thrones or something, and I was like, it's been too long, the last season's been too long, if I can't remember the actual name of the program, and it like took about like 15 minutes before I was like, actually that's not what it's called at all. But
so I just started going back and watching the last season to catch up, and I started thinking, like, this isn't about White Walkers, this is about climate change, like we're all just pretending that it doesn't exist.
It's a zombie movie, it's a zombie film. That's what it is. It's a zombie program.
No, they're all waging war with each other, but actually the bigger problem
everyone turns into a zombie.
It is, basically.
There's a zombie dragon, for Christ's sakes.
There is a zombie dragon.
Oh, shit. Everyone's skitting out there.
Look, if you haven't seen the last season, you're too far behind.
Hey, nothing. Actually, rubbish. We're talking about rubbish, aren't we?
We are. So, you pretty much have to be living under a rock if you haven't heard. But it did kind of get a little bit brushed under the carpet because there was bigger things kind of happening.
Maybe some willful ignorance as well going on out there.
Yeah. But in late March, there was a huge weather system that encroached upon the South Island, and it hammered the West Coast. So, A lot of our weather systems come from the southwest, and there's a big mountain range there, which once it hits that, the west coast gets hammered, and that's why the west coast is very dry, and then the Canterbury Plains are very, the west coast is very wet, and then the Canterbury Plains on the other side of the mountains are quite dry. Mm. So just a little bit of geography there for people. But so the poor west coast really, you know, weathered the storm, and there was, you know, loss of life, and you would have seen that Waiho Bridge that's been completely wiped out. So, you know, it's not great for the west coast at the moment. But
sounds a bit shit.
It does. And it was one of those places that was on my list of maybe I should buy down there, because you can buy for like $50,000. And if the world turns to crap, you know, it doesn't seem like a bad place to live. But this has really messed that up. Because what it has done is left in its wake a landfill washout that is quite frankly quite a big disaster for New Zealand. And what it's also done is brought to the forefront how underprepared New Zealand is, and frankly has always been, in regards to our landfills. So I started tackling this topic this week and thought maybe we could break it into two, one being historic land sites that I'll talk about this week, and then next week we'll maybe talk about the future of land sites.
How does it work? You dig a hole, put the rubbish in it?
Well, that was the theory. That was the theory. So historically what has happened is that landfills have been used rubbish has really been used to kind of fill land. Landfill is kind of why it got its name. So, I've got an imperfect example of it. I live in the Waitakere's in a little bit of a gully, and when we decided to rip up the weeds and start planting natives, we started digging out bloody everything. There was a dishwasher, there's been car batteries.
A few Ripples packets?
Oh, and the beer bottle, like really old L&P bottles.
What was the beer? What type of beer? Lion Red? What were people drinking out there at the time?
Oh, you know, they're so old that most of it's glass, and it's so old that it's actually all the labels have washed off.
Okay, so it's definitely not disappearing in the ground like we want it to, sort of what you're getting at.
No.
Okay, well, maybe we should think something else up. It sounds like you've made a big discovery here, Rita. It turns out that rubbish doesn't evaporate in the ground.
No, exactly. And all this is, you know, it's taken us like a few 100,000 years to figure out. Like, I don't really understand why we didn't figure that out earlier. I think we just kept moving.
Yeah.
You know, like we were like, oh, we've searched this site, let's just go to another one.
Grass
but anyway,
just like makes everything look mint, hey? It's like, oh, sweet, look at that mint hill.
Yeah, totally. They didn't live long enough to find out. So a bit of a problem there. And often these sites were actually like beside rivers. And besides the coast as well, so that makes it a little bit more complicated, because we've got two issues here. One is the solid waste, which we've seen in the west coast, where you know, all the solid waste has the whole tip has kind of burst, run down the river, and you've got, you know, containers of all sorts of stuff. You've got tires, you've got all sorts of stuff scattered across 300 kilometres of beach.
I'm getting like a Ganges vibe if you see there's a river.
It is. The photos are shocking. And they're some of our most pristine beaches. Joseph, Rivermouth, the Fox Rivermouth, like, really, yeah, it's pretty tragic. So the solid waste is an issue. And a lot of it, because it was from, like, historic times, there's stuff like DDT in there, you know. DDT, so it's okay, like really nasty agrochemicals that have caused like birth defects and stuff that have since been banned. So that's really nasty. And then the other thing that's quite nasty about it is a stuff called leachate. So leachate is basically all the liquid, like, you know, when you don't change a rubbish bag for a long time.
Not me,
and
John.
All the liquid drops to the bottom and it's super gross.
That's the good shit.
So in the household rubbish, it's probably just gross, like, you know, some oil and some food or whatever. In a normal tip site, what happens is that all that liquid mixes with toxic liquid, so things like battery acid, because people throw out their batteries in the rubbish.
Yo.
Things like paints or just chemicals. So it all mixes, and because it's liquid, it's called leachate, and it can then leach out into the waterways, so through the soil, and make its way to the local, like the nearest waterway. And
I think it can combust as well, actually. It gets quite gnarly.
Oh,
it gets real super funky, that stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty gnarly. And in fact, even tip sites, I mean, it's very combustible. They usually have to burn off the methane from those sites. So, the whole tip site situation is really gnarly. Nowadays, what we do is we actually line our tip sites with like a thick rubber.
How many tip sites are there, Rita, around New Zealand?
I can answer that next week. Active tip sites, I'm not too aware of, but I do know that there's 90 sites at the moment, about 90 sites that they're looking at.
What's the granddaddy site?
I couldn't tell you the largest one. They don't, you know what, this is half the problem, is the data on it is terrible. Mm. So they're only just starting to go now, we've got all these old tip sites. How many old tip sites are there, and how many are by the rivers?
Are they privately run, or are they government owned?
So those 90 sites are officially, they're around 90 sites, are the official register so far, because the government said, this is really bad. And have reached out to the regional councils and said, how many sites do you have? And so far, they've found about 90 that are kind of on record.
Right.
But they've also, in the background, been doing some work, and this is a whole, you know, it's another layer of problems, is that they've surveyed and found that there's actually a bigger problem in that rural on-site dumping is really widespread. So what you're seeing there is farmers, like rural situations where there's no rubbish collection at all, they will just either bury or
burn
their rubbish. Yeah. So they're saying that they're looking at about between 20 and 40 tonnes per farm per year, on average, is either burnt or buried. And a lot of that is some of that is pretty nice stuff, like, you know, pesticide containers and plastics and whatnot. So it's really quite sad. And I think also, you know, in the defence of these people, like, they don't have the collections that we have, and they also don't have regional councils that can afford a solution.
But no one's got a plan, though. No one's got a plan. There's heaps of crap going to a place at the moment. We're not like thinking, okay, is there any way that we can become completely waste neutral? Like, I've actually got a saved thing I've been meaning to watch of a little town in Japan that recycles nearly all of its trash. Cute little Japanese town. Why can't we like get we'll sort of like knuckle down and figure that out? Is it too hard?
No, I don't think so. I think we've just got away with it for so long that we haven't had to.
We're little shits, aren't we?
Yeah. And then trying to turn that ship around and say to people, you can't just... So if you think about your waste that you throw out in the rubbish bin, I mean, I don't know if it's widespread in Auckland.
It's got to be law. It's got to be like, you can't... It actually has to come from the top to the point where you can't at the supermarket buy random shit that's just been wrapped 15 times in crummy plastic or whatever.
Absolutely.
It's the fact that it's available. People are going to buy it.
Absolutely. And it's kind of the only
it's
way,
complacency
really, of buying things. Like
some people can't afford to worry about these type of things. You know, it's like
absolutely.
Too many other things they've got to fucking worry about. They don't have that kind of liberty where they can be that righteous. You know what I mean? Some people just scrape and buy.
They're just trying to survive day to day. Which is completely, you know, and in countries where they're trying to find solutions, the solution is to make things actually much more simple.
Mm.
But that is a big shift because it is about giving people more time mainly, because it takes time to go to, it's not necessarily more expensive, but it takes time to go to, you know, a place where you have to, you know, refill all your containers or whatever versus buying a container already there. You know, and I think jumping a little bit to one of the solutions here, you know, we've talked about this again and again, but a tax on the manufacturers is vital because they are not going to come up with a solution until it's costing them.
Well, yeah, it's just supply and demand. If we just go, hey, by the way, we don't allow that kind of crap anymore, they'll make some another type of thing for us. And
absolutely.
That'll be the thing that we buy and that'll be that. And everyone will be like, fuck, New Zealand's this cool place that does this cool shit. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely. And if we, you know, if buying, you know, I mean, let's just take, I mean, I don't like picking on them because they get picked on for everything.
Pick right on them, don't you worry about it.
But go on. They are the most, you know, probably one of the most profitable companies in the world, so who cares? If you look at someone like Coke and their product, I mean, I don't actually know how much it costs. Let's just say it costs 50 cents to make a Coke. Now, that bottle that they're making it in probably only costs about 5 cents to make. So they really don't have any incentive to come up with a solution. Now, if the government turned around and said to them, no, we're putting a tax on plastic, all of a sudden that plastic bottle is going to cost you a dollar, how quickly will they move to glass as an alternative? And then we've got the option of creating jobs in the regions for cleaning the glass bottles. And, you know, and in New Zealand, we're very lucky because we do have an all right water supply to be able to offer that as a solution. Mm. So, you know, I think that these companies, absolutely, they're driven by law to deliver the best profit back to their shareholders. They can't volunteer, they're not legally allowed to voluntarily do this stuff because it's going to cost their shareholders money. So we have to put in place the government regulation. It's the only thing we can do really at this point. And I'm also just going to say that we have got away with it for a long time because what people don't seem to fully understand is that we've actually lived through the most stable climatic times ever in this history of the world ever. They're the most like stable and best for us as human beings. And because we pump so much carbon into the atmosphere,
it shows. We're ripping the best we've ever ripped at the moment as humans. So
obviously the
conditions are just right for a bunch of little jerks like us.
Yeah. So and within 50 years, that's going to become a very unstable environment, atmosphere. So what we're then doing is we're going to see more of these extreme weather events where things that we've got away with in the past, like having tip sites like this, we haven't engineered our tips properly, you know, to deal with that level of rainfall.
If you've got a tip, then your engineering has failed a long time before you decided to have a tip.
Well, that's true.
Right? The system's fucked.
Your system's already flawed. I mean, I think we keep thinking about the fact that
you're just deleting land when you have a tip. It's like, oh, yeah, sweet, that was a pretty good spot. But it'll be in like 50 years or something.
And the thinking's changed, right? We've gone from going, oh, sweet, we can, like, the fact that people used to just throw their crap into my backyard and then put soil over it is bizarre to me. I don't want to live next to that, And that's it. I mean, that's what's happening now is people don't want to live next to tip sites. They're clawing up to that.
Shall we think about maybe next week talking about recycling solutions or what this can do as a country?
Rita, I'm curious.
We could like organise it, get a plan together or something.
I'm curious to hear about the cleanup effort that's going on in the South Island as well. Obviously, the tips washed out down there. What the hell is happening? What are our contingency plans?
It's pretty sad actually because they keep kind of going, oh, it's only 50 kilometres of beach. Oh, no, it's 100. Oh, it's kind of...
I don't really like that beach anyway.
So it's pretty gnarly. They have 50 volunteers down there at the moment. isn't really enough, and there's also this is what happened with Rena too. That's one of the worst environmental disasters. I mean, our army should be down there. I think they've got the army on the bridge now, so hopefully it means that they'll get down to this site. Well, but yeah. To me, you know, it was an emergency. They should have had them there already. And it's also very toxic. So these dudes, what concerns me is in 5 years' time, are we going to get these cancer, poor people with higher cancer rates because they've been touching stuff they really shouldn't have touched, you know?
Maybe a sort of Simpson-style fish or something like that.
Yeah, and then all that whole coastline of fish, you know. It's a bit gnarly, really. There has been a bit of a government response to this problem. So there has, I think it's fair to say the Ministry of Environment have been severely underfunded over the last 9 years. They really have not had the opportunity to care about this stuff, and that has changed, which is great. And there is some funding going into trying to fix these problems. And the best place to start is data. So they are collecting data to find out how big the problem is, because it's all great going, oh, you know, here's, I mean, I think the fund to help farmers is $400,000. Now, that's not going to go very far. And they're doing a whole lot of education.
I'll help farmers convert to weed and hemp. I'll help them do that. I'm keen for that. Fuck, what do I need to do? I'm keen. That's the help I want to give farmers.
Yeah. I mean,
daylight saving. I like it better like this. Is this the normal time, how it is now? It's dark now. I like this better. Let's just keep it like this. Daylight saving. Cheers.
Hey, Rena.
Simon's best friend over here, Cam.
Yeah, so we've obviously we've opened a can of worms when it comes to talking about rubbish and rubbish dumps. Shall we wrap this up here and come back for part two next week?
Sounds awesome.
So next week, focusing on
some solutions. What if we just thought about some mint ideas? Like, we'll have a look around the world, see what around people are doing around the world, and see if we can incorporate those ideas into our own shit.
Yep, we can do that. We sure can.
That sound good?
Sounds good.
Hey, thank you very much, Rita. We'll check in with you next Tuesday. Next Monday.
Monday?
I'm a day out at the moment. Right. Daylight savings, damn you.
An hour, one day. Ah. Have a good week, guys.
See ya.
Kia ora.
Bye.
That was Sustaining Alive on 95BFM.